Welcome to Bat Yard's Finest, bringing you the finest of Batman and Superman in pop culture. From Metropolis, I am Josh from Bat Yard Productions.
And I'm Leah, all the way from Themyscira. Today, we have a returning guest, a very special artist, Steven SK Illustrations. Would you care to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Steven Kruppenbacher, and I'm a freelance illustrator from Poughkeepsie, New York. I mostly dabble in digital art, focusing on 80s horror and classic horror art, anything macabre. And yeah.
So we met you at the Albany Toy Show, I believe.
No. It was Hudson Valley.
Hudson Valley.
Yeah, what
do you Hudson Valley 20
Yeah, it was like 2018 or 2019.
2018 or 2019.
Yeah, it was like 2 years ago. Yeah, it was a little bit ago. Dalia, you gotta get your facts straight. But anyway.
He is an impressive guy. We could have met him, you know.
Yeah, anywhere. Like we said, we had Steven on before on the one of the episodes prior. So be sure to check out that episode too. I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but go and find it. You know, you'll see it in our, you know, listings of where you can find this podcast. But Steven, thank you for joining us back again. You know, the reason why we definitely wanted you back on for the Halloween, you know, season is because all your art, like you said, is with the macabre, with kind of the grotesque, kind of like with the funny, you know, horror humor. So I thought it would be the perfect time to have you return onto our show.
Well, that is much appreciated.
So my first question is, do you have any like plans or anything that you're doing to kind of get yourself in the spirit of like All Hallows Eve?
Yes and no. I mean,
it's hard now, so that's why.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this 2020 has been hard on everybody, regardless of, you know, whatever you're into. But honestly, like I never thought I would be one of those kind of people where like, Halloween is every day. You know what I mean? Like, and then I think this pandemic and quarantining and having to stay home all the time really brought it out of me. 'Cause like just recently, I was looking around the house and I'm like, there's having, you know, decorative horror movie posters, you know, framed and put up on your wall. And then there's straight up just like having like Halloween decorations that are meant to be in your front yard hanging up on the inside of your house all year round. And I've noticed like it's starting to look like that a little like, I guess when you're into that genre of like film and media, you can make Halloween any day, whereas opposed to you'd feel weird watching a Christmas movie in July, but you can pop in a horror movie that gives you that spooky feeling of October and you know, autumn leaves and jack-o'-lanterns like in the middle of summer.
Oh yeah. No.
So I've kind of been doing that all year, like just I kind of fell off of it, but for a while, like my wife and I were watching a horror movie every night, but it had to be like something kind of obscure, or at least like something at least one of us has never seen before.
So you're expanding your horizons. You're taking the opportunity to branch out within the same genre.
Yeah, and they're not all winners. I mean, there are a lot of stinkers out there. And I think And I think that's what attracts me to horror movies so much is that, like, a bad horror movie can still be fun to watch. Like, a bad comedy is a miserable thing to sit through. Like, I can't think of one off the top of my head, like, but like a straight up comedy that's really bad, like, you want to die. But like a bad horror movie can at least make you laugh and you can still at least like have a good time. So there's always that fine line between horror and comedy. They're kind of the two faces of the same coin, you know?
Yeah, like when a horror movie fails, it's like funny because like, oh, look how bad this production is at failing at, being trying to
Yeah,
hold
you see like
horrifying, horrific.
you can see a boom mic hanging into the
Right.
shot, and you know it, the like the you know the cheap sets that they put together, like you can see wall shaking because like it's made out of like cheap plywood, but you know, like look at any old Ed Wood film, like they were made for like pennies on the dollar, and they're not particularly great movies, be it from the acting or the production. They're all essentially stinkers, but like they're some of the most fun horror or sci-fi movies to watch. That's why Ed Wood's one of my favorite directors.
Yeah, I've seen Ed Wood, the Tim Burton movie, and that's definitely one of my all-time favorite movies. And I tried to watch Plan 9 from Outer Space, like the actual movie, and I just thought it was kind of boring. I don't know. I feel like
See, I love the Tim Burton movie. Like my wife and I are constantly saying lines from that movie to each other
Oh, technically close.
on the regular, And the Tim Burton movie is so great because it's got that Tim Burton twist to it. It's, back before Tim Burton kind of like lost his stuff, in my opinion. But that movie really brings out the goofiness of the character. Like it plays up really positive parts, but every once in a while, like that the darkness of reality kind of creeps in. You forget that, like, oh yeah, Ed Wood kind of died a penniless drunk, surrounded by like bimbos and stuff like that. And Bela Lugosi had a really bad heroin problem,
Yeah, it's definitely like kind of like how they portray it. It's like this all like this kind of Hollywood-esque kind of movie, like from Gold. And once they show you the facts at the end of the movie, like right before the screen crawl, you're like, oh, these people like, lived the horrible lives,
Like early Johnny Depp films are great. He's a really good actor. Ed Wood is one of my favorite films, and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is one of my favorite
Oh
movies.
yeah, that's a great one.
Like the way he portrays Ed Wood, like I'm certain Ed Wood didn't really talk or act like that, but it works for the style of the film and the feeling that they're going for with it.
Yeah, it seems like they're kind of going for like a kind of a Wizard of Oz kind of style, like Edward runs into these like fantastical characters and then he like runs into them like doing what they kind of are known for doing. Like we're introduced to Bela Lugosi in a coffin, I think Tor Johnson, and he's in a wrestling match,
Yeah,
it's
like that, like everything about that movie was like felt together perfectly. Like you said with the Wizard of Oz thing, I can't remember where I read it, but Johnny Depp based his performance on
Yeah, was this Tin Man or something, or just
it was the Scarecrow and Ronald Reagan.
I did hear that. That is an
And George
opportunity.
Daniel Steele, who was a bald wrestler, played the role of Tor Johnson, who was a bald wrestler. Like they look damn near identical.
Yeah, it was like perfect casting at the perfect time, like how could you
Oh,
recreate that?
Bill Murray as Oh my God, why am I blanking on his character now? I feel so foolish. Bunny Breckenridge.
Oh yes, yes.
Yeah, he's got some of my favorite lines. He's like, they're going to take out my insides and make me a woman.
Yeah, and he's so open about it, especially like in the 1940s and 50s. Like he just doesn't care. It's like so accepting of who he is.
or when he's like they really did, get money from a Baptist. I believe it was a Baptist church.
They had
the production, but in order to do so, they all had to like convert to Christianity. And like Bill Murray's line, it's like the priest is, as he's about to like baptize him in the pool, he's like, do you take Satan and all this other stuff? And he just like looks at him, he's just like, sure. And
then just put me through this, you know. Yeah. We gotta make this film.
Do what I gotta do.
And I think it was Plan 9 for Outer Space that they did that for. And it's funny that. Yes. You mentioned Ed Wood. I mean, he's from our neck of the woods. He's from Poughkeepsie,
yes. New York.
So I that's what I find all the more fascinating about the movie and the character and, you know, the real guy, you know, the real director. You know, he's from Poughkeepsie. He's from our side of town, our side of the river and everything. And, you know, and then he comes to become the world's most, you know, lonesome director, basically the world's worst director of all time, which I don't think it's true, but you know,
no.
That reputation.
The you know, for the time it was the worst. Like it's how they say, like, The Room is the world's worst movie, or Troll 2 is the world's worst movie,
right?
It was the worst movie at that moment. Like, there's always going to be bad movies, and you know, for one reason or another, you know.
Yeah, if anyone out there has not seen Ed Wood, I highly recommend.
Oh yeah,
it. I mean, I you could just tell by us talking about it and raving about it that I think it's Tim Burton's best film. I think it's one of his best films.
I would agree. I see a three-way. God, and it's hard because, like, as I start to think of it, I think of another movie. I was going to say it's a three-way tie between Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Edward Scissorhands, and Ed Wood. And then I'm like, what about Batman? What about Pee Wee? I'm like, God.
Yeah, exactly. Then those pop in your head too.
Yeah, yeah. Mars Attacks.
Yeah, Mars Attacks is pretty fun. I wouldn't say that's his best, one of his best films. I think
No. Mars Attacks is definitely not one of his best.
Yeah, I think it's funner films, but I wouldn't say it's.
Yes, it's one of his more fun films. Like, I can't watch. Even though I did once, but like I can't watch like the Alice in Wonderland movie.
Oh, that was such a disappointment. I remember I was so disappointed when I went in the theaters. I think I was in high school at the time, and I remember like hearing Alice in Wonderland and Tim Burton. I thought that was like a marriage made in heaven. And then when I watched the film, I was like so disappointed. It was awful.
It's ugly looking. Like, it's just so.
Very drab, yeah.
You think of
like there's so many shades of brown and tan in it that just it was just not what I would have pictured an Alice in Wonderland movie.
No, not at all.
You think of his other, you know, works of art, basically like Nightmare and The Corpse Bride, and they're even though The Corpse Bride, we actually just watched The Corpse Bride last night, and you know, the movie is portrayed in shades of blue and gray, at least in the human world, but it's still
the underworld's very vibrant in that movie,
right? But I'm even just talking like about the introduction, you know, you think the whole movie is going to be like that, and the families are portrayed in gray and, you know, very drab colors, but it's still artfully done.
That just goes back to what we were talking about, like. You mentioned Nightmare Before Christmas and Corpse Bride. I'm like, I completely forgot about those two movies. Like,
right.
I can't choose with him. You know, it's so hard.
I wouldn't. Well, you can't really say Nightmare is a Tim Burton film. It's you know, he wrote it and produced it, but he didn't direct it. So
in terms of the art style, you know, a lot of the characters were designed on his drawing, so
yeah, they definitely has his style.
Mm-hmm. It has his style in it, so.
Right, but then it draws the line, whose movie is it? Is it Danny Elfman's movie? Is it Tim Burton's movie?
Yeah. Henry Selick's or... yeah, that's a whole other argument right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, you said you're watching new horror films. Like, can you name like a few that you're watching? Like any gems in there? Any turds? Any duds? Like,
lots of turds. mostly turds, but one that we recently watched, it was a newer one. I think it came out in like 2014 or 2015. I had always seen it on Netflix, The Autopsy of Jane Doe. That was really good. That one actually gave me a little bit of the heebie-jeebies. And
is that a documentary?
No. It's a straight up horror movie. It's about a father and son that work in a family owned coroner's office, and a body is delivered to them very late at night, and without giving anything away, things get very strange.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll definitely check that out. I mean, I actually have Netflix, so that's one of the streaming services I do have.
I believe it's still on. I'm trying to think. Oh, okay. Here's a stinker. Like it ruined my night. Like I couldn't wait to go to bed. it came out in 1989 or 90, but it's a it's on Amazon Prime, and it's called Grotesque, and it has Linda Blair in it. And
is she from The Exorcist?
Yeah.
Yes.
So okay. It's on Amazon Prime, and right up front, like the image, like the thumbnail that they have for it is like some like grotesque looking art, and like right up front, they got Linda Blair, and they're, you know, the hard Linda Blair cell, and the summary is like ropes you in. This was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Linda Blair is in it for 10 minutes tops, maybe. And it, like, there was nothing grotesque. It was convoluted. There was nothing grotesque about it. It was just convoluted and boring. And it, like, I'm getting pissed off just thinking about having to sit through watching that again.
Oh, so it wasn't good at all. It's like you don't recommend.
No. It's like how I felt after we binge watched The Haunting of Bly Manor this past weekend, and because we are big fans of The Haunting of Hill House, and even with The Haunting of Hill House, like the first episode has got a spooky moment in it, and then, like, you know, those things kind of like build up to it, so the first two episodes might be a little boring. No, I gutted through the first three episodes, and then I hate watched the rest of it.
Almost like I have to know what happens next, but I don't want to.
I was so disappointed. Like, I had to take a walk when we were done watching it.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
It was so because my expectations were so high. yeah, that you know, not saying don't watch it. That, you know, as that's just my opinion on it. Definitely try and watch it if you're into it. I know other people have been, but. For me, it was aggravating, to say the least.
To say the least.
I'll definitely check it out. I mean, we've been kind of going back to more of the Universal monster movies. There's a few that I haven't seen. We just watched The Bride of Frankenstein, and I've seen Frankenstein, but I'd never seen Bride of Frankenstein. I think it's a far superior film to even Frankenstein, which Frankenstein's a great film.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But
Bride of Frankenstein was even better, which is so opposite of what I get from sequels. Usually it's just kind of more of the same, not as good. Like this is excels above the, you know, hits the ceiling and goes beyond it, you know.
Yeah, it had more than one storyline.
Yes, it was a bit closer to the book. You know, they still take some liberties with it, but yeah, Bride of Frankenstein is out of all the original Universal ones, I think everybody's favorite is Bride of Frankenstein. Ghost of Frankenstein is actually really good too.
Who plays Frankenstein in that one?
In Ghost of Frankenstein?
Yeah. Like Frankenstein's monster.
I believe it's still Karloff. I believe that's his last time.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Yeah, well, I haven't gone that deep yet. Like I just kind of got the surface level collection of the Universal monster movies, like the first ones, and I know there's like sequels, like when Frankenstein fights the Wolfman. I haven't seen those yet. You know, I'm still kind of digging through, but like,
yeah, those ones are fun. But I mean, they're not going to blow your hair back as much as I think the original like first ones were. There was something I don't know. I think there's just something very special about the first Dracula and the first Frankensteins from Universal.
Yeah, no doubt. It kind of gets fuzzy with me when I hear that Bela Lugosi plays Frankenstein's monster at some point, yeah. And then I know he plays Igor at some other point. So, like, that's where I'm just... I haven't seen those films, so, like, I know it's, like... I know he fought so hard not to be Frankenstein, you know, and then it's just kind of funny how it's the door swings back at him and he, you know, he's like, all right, yeah, I'll be Frankenstein this time.
Yeah. Yeah. He plays Igor in Son of Frankenstein.
Oh, okay.
And he kills it in that one like that. Like next to Dracula, that might be one of Lugosi's best performances actually. And I'm sorry, it wasn't Ghost of Frankenstein. It was actually Son of Frankenstein that I wanted to say was really good. Ghost of Frankenstein is good, but Son of Frankenstein, that's the one where they change up Frankenstein's kind of design. Like they give him like this like furry sweater. I don't know, not a whole lot of people like it. I kind of dig it, but
okay,
yeah.
That's a new take on Frankenstein I never would have considered.
Yeah, it's a change up for sure.
I would watch these like kind of like small documentaries about like the Universal monster movies and you know the like a bunch of horror films. It was called Cinemassacre's Monster Madness.
Oh my god, we watch that every night when it comes.
Oh out really?
In October. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So that's how I got a lot of the information from like a bunch of horror films and like I'm like, oh, I gotta watch this movie, I gotta watch this other movie.
Yeah.
And I know in one of those the one that Bela Lugosi plays Frankenstein, I know you could correct me on which film that is, but I guess like he's blind at one point and he like picks up his arms like and he's walking, you know, like he's blinded, and now when everyone portrays Frankenstein, they always pick their arms up, so they're portraying Bela Lugosi's Frankenstein and not Carl. Yes.
No, that's true. That is very true.
Yeah, so I find that, like, pretty, like, really funny, like, when people, like, kind of imitate Dracula, they obviously do Lugosi's, and when they imitate Frankenstein, they're, you know, without even knowing, they're imitating Lugosi's Frankenstein as well.
He's kind of made his mark on a lot of these classic.
Absolutely. Well, when you think of Frankenstein, you instantly think of Boris Karloff. But like when people imitate him without really knowing where the roots are, they would just kind of do Bela Lugosi's, you know, blind.
I mean, if you watch the first, the first Frankenstein with Karloff, his movements as the monster are very erratic. He's actually, you know, even though he's wearing these tall platform shoes that make him gigantic, he's actually quite hunched over. He's pawing at things. He's not portraying it like he's walking almost like a zombie, even though technically, I mean, you could classify Frankenstein as some type of zombie, you know, sorts. He's a reanimated corpse.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that's funny though. About the Monster Madness though. Yeah, I actually have on my Roku in my bedroom. It has like two save buttons on it, and one of the save buttons goes immediately to a search option for like all of the past Monster Madnesses, like in separate playlists. So like it has like the 80s-a-thon, like Monster Madness. I'll fall asleep to them. Like honestly, one thing, like I love horror movies, but one thing I love almost probably more than horror movies are horror movie documentaries. I'm always looking for documentaries on either about the genre or about specific movies, like behind the scenes, like making of documentaries. I'm always looking for those.
Oh yeah.
Those are the best.
Those are awesome. You know, I just got all the Blu-ray collections, like I said, of the Universal Monsters. So like I watch all the behind the scenes and the documentaries and the commentaries on it, and like just finding out more information. And while I'm doing that, I'm sure you probably do the same thing. Like I want to work on something artistic and give me like the juices and the creative flow that I needed to kind of get through to like an art project. I don't know if you're kind of the same way.
No, I very much am. I actually gain a lot of inspiration from watching the documentaries. One of my all time favorites. I think I made a post about it on July 4th. It's on Amazon Prime if anybody wants to watch it. And I think you can actually find it on YouTube as well. I love it so much I fall asleep to it. I'll put it on at night. It's called Nightmares in Red, White, and Blue. And it's narrated by Lance Henriksen. And it's got interviews with like horror writers, horror actors, and directors and stuff. But basically, it goes through how horror movies are a very American thing, and how they helped build the American cinema to what it is today. And like it goes from, you know, the early silent ones where like they were made by immigrants that were coming over here, and then you have like the Universal ones, you know, the earliest stages of Hollywood, and then, you know, times are changing and all of a sudden there's World War II. World War II ends, and now we're in this different era where now we're kind of forgetting the monsters that are based on folklore from the past that were brought over from the old country, like vampires and things like that. Now we're worried about, things created from the atomic bomb. So now you have like the 50s sci-fi era where, you know, every giant monster is created from some type of nuclear explosion, from some type of like military testing and stuff like that. You know, your Godzillas, your Rodans.
Yeah.
them, you know, anything with a giant bug, it came from radiation from a nuclear. And then you know, like the 70s, like exploitation films, which I really like, you know, where they're just like, hey, like, let's see how gnarly we can get. And then, you know, that creeps into the 80s, you know, splatter and slasher films and stuff like that.
So if you had to pick, because we've obviously been discussing so many great, fantastical movies, if you had to pick, like, one, and this is probably so hard, if you had to pick one that's your all-time favorite movie monster, which one would you pick?
All-time favorite movie monster. Ooh.
I know, we just discussed so many.
Yeah,
so.
We've gone through all the decades.
That is a tough one.
I'm just curious if you could, like, if you had to say to somebody, this is the best one.
Well, I mean, what counts as a monster? Like, are we counting, like, psychopaths that look like everyday people?
Yeah, I mean, I would go so far as, like, kaijus to, like, you know, till the Michael Myers kind of scale, you know.
Okay.
Somewhere between there.
All right. If we're keeping it to latex masks and rubber suits.
Yeah.
I would probably say Leatherface.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is probably one of my favorite movies. I remember the first time I saw it. It was one of those films where, like, you know, it starts off with, like, you know, this is based on, like, true events, and it has, like, grainy photography in the beginning. Like, this is the last known image of the murderer known as Leatherface, and it's like a grainy black and white photo. It flashes, and I'm, you know, as a young kid, I'm sitting there like, oh my god, did this really happen? Like, if I, like, it's like, I knew what I was watching wasn't real. Not, you know, not to get too graphic. It's not like it was like a snuff film where I was like actually watching someone being murdered. Like, no, I knew what I was watching was fake, but I'm like, no, wait a minute. Was there actually a guy killing people with a chainsaw wearing another man's face? Like, did mm-hmm. that, like, and then as I grew older, I realized, like, oh, it was based on some aspects of, like, Ed Gein, the city in Wisconsin, and things like that. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, okay. A lot of weird serial killers are from Wisconsin. I don't know what the connection is to the state.
But something about Wisconsin and the Midwest. I don't know if it's because there's nothing to do out there. I don't know, but they come from there.
Yeah, that's what and Jeffrey Dahmer. I think there's at least another one. I can't, yeah, but there's a few. There's more than one, which is kind of it's
unsettling. Yeah. But yeah, I would probably go with the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, no, that's a good choice. That's an awesome choice.
I don't know if you've watched it, you know, anytime soon, but go and watch it again. And it's one of those kind of like what we talked about in the beginning. You can pop in a horror movie that's based in October, you know, in your VCR DVD player in July, and immediately feel like it's like mid-October and it's, you know, it's spooky season. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it could be snowing in January and I can movie in and I will feel overwhelmingly hot because, like, the way it was shot and knowing the fact that, like, they were shooting in Texas in July and, like, the scenes in the house where there's, like, chopped up meat that was, you know, it was real meat in there. Oh, yeah.
Probably, it was definitely rotting on set.
It was rotting and like in the heat, like I'm getting anxiety just like thinking about that.
It makes me like want to.
Yeah.
It makes you want to retch. Like I immediately get like heat prickles. It's just like.
I remember
it's that kind of movie.
Yeah. No, I definitely have to rewatch that. I remember. It's been a few years since I watched it. I remember watching the remake. I think Jessica Biel or Biel.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
That was okay.
it was okay.
It didn't offend me watching it. So that's the best I could say. You know, I was like, I wasn't saying, oh, this is awful. This is a disgrace to the original material, you know, while I was watching
it. No, it didn't bother me like that. Like, honestly, like people give, I think Michael Bay did that one too. I think that was from Platinum Dunes, but people give the Friday the 13th remake and the Nightmare on Elm Street remake a lot of shit.
We just started rewatching the Friday the 13th. Now, when I watch those, I immediately have a feeling similar to what you said about how it may not be entirely true, but, you know, in the back of your mind, you're kind of saying, oh my gosh, like this happened or this could actually happen.
Yeah. Until like it gets
to the woods, yeah.
Right.
The Friday the 13th remake. I saw that opening night at like a midnight showing up in Albany back when I was in school up there, and I like the first the opening sequence with the first set of campers that get killed.
Mm-hmm.
Had me hooked. The fact that it's actually the scene right before it cuts to like the opening credits, and then we meet everyone with a Jason Voorhees that runs and has purpose is probably the most terrifying thing I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
When he runs at the person. Like at the camera with the machete, like Jason never ran. Like,
yeah, you always just be there. Like you felt his presence throughout the whole, like the original films, I should say.
Yeah, like in parts 2 and 3, he wasn't quite as beat up and zombified. He had some life to him, but he never straight up sprinted at you. Like a linebacker.
Yeah.
And I give credit, a lot of credit to the actor, Derek Mears. He plays Swamp Thing in the I think they're showing it on the CW now.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's Derek Mears.
I was interested in seeing that show. I never got a chance to watch it, but I do like the design of Swamp Thing and how it's
like- I do too. He brought a lot of life to that character. I actually liked his portrayal of Jason. I like how they kind of condensed more or less the first three movies together. You know, we don't get the twist of his mother Pamela Voorhees being the killer like we do in the first movie. We're kind of already. No, we're there. Jason's a maniac living out in the woods. How we see him get his mask and everything like that. I he was smart, like with how he used bear traps and things like that. They didn't make him a complete dullard, you know.
It just terrified me, you know, at the end where you think everything's gonna be okay. And then she suddenly, you know, you don't know it's a vision, but, you know, the corpse jumps in the water. And, you know, just when you think it's over, I literally had a holy shit moment.
Yeah.
And it's like right as you're about to fall asleep, like you're watching the movie, and then all of a sudden this happens. I'm like, holy crap, now I'm not going to sleep at all. But you like, realize, like, okay, that didn't actually happen, but, you know, that just reestablishes that thought in the back of your mind, like, hey, just so you know, this happened.
Yeah, and there's nothing creepier than than being out anywhere and thinking you're alone and not knowing if you actually are. I think that's, be it in a dark house or, and it could be in the middle of the day. And you could have every light on, every window open, natural light pouring in. And if for 1 second you don't think you're alone anymore, that is terrifying.
Yeah, that is freaky. Even if it just like crawls, like it's even if it's nothing, like your mind can play more tricks on you than you can imagine.
It could be your own house, your home, which is supposed to be the safest place in the world for you. If for 1 second you don't think you're alone and you're supposed to be alone, ugh,
So I'm never leaving my house again.
yeah. But oh, and the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. I the Jackie Earle Haley, I thought played a great Freddy Krueger. It was more, it was darker in tone. It was more visceral. I understood what they were going for. I truthfully like I that's why A Nightmare on Elm Street 1 and 2 and Wes Craven's New Nightmare are actually my favorites, because Freddy isn't portrayed goofy in those movies. Not that there's anything wrong with the other ones. Some of the other ones where he actually does get goofier, the filmmaking gets better. But I like the darker tone of the first two, and I understood that with the remake. The in my opinion, the weakest aspects of the remake were the kids. The actor that played Nancy and the replacement for that was essentially supposed to be the Glenn character, the Johnny Depp character in the remake. I didn't, there was nothing that made me want to care about them. Whereas I like in the first one, like I cared about whether or not Nancy lived or died or not. Like they made you, they got you invested into that character. And I just didn't feel like I like if Freddie just lopped their head off, I was like, all right, cool. Another one for the pile. Like let's bring another one in.
Right. It was just like a body count at this point. You didn't care about the characters. It was just
Yeah.
like kill.
And considering that the remake was touching on such dark topics as, child abuse and child murder, you really want your audience to root for, said protagonist that has not just survived, child abuse, but is now being abused by a monster in her dreams. You know what I mean? Like, and I didn't get that, and I think it left a lot of people feeling kind of icky,
Yeah,
Like a bad taste in their
I think
mouth.
that's one of the worst sins like a horror movie could do is like when you don't care about the protagonist and what they're going through and all the characters and their struggles, then what is there to root for? Like you then at that point you just want to see the kills. If you can't even root
Yes.
for the protagonist, then I think that's one of the worst things that a horror movie can do. It's just it has nothing going for it at that point. It has no story.
I don't care how bad a production is. It's like what we were talking about before. I don't care how bad something is. Just don't be boring.
Right.
You can have the worst acting, worst sets, worst sound. There could be boom mics in every shot. The story can be convoluted, but if you have me engaged at all, like if you're keeping me engaged in some way, be it by having me make fun of it, or if I may be laughing for all the wrong reasons, but I'm engaged. I'm not bored to tears like that movie I was talking about, Grotesque. Like I was bored to tears with that movie. Like, and I'm not one to just turn things off. Like I like to see things through to the very end. Like maybe the last 10 minutes of this movie will turn around
Yeah,
and
redeems the whole thing.
it'll redeem the whole thing. Maybe it's the twist I'm not ready for yet. Like, don't be boring. I don't care if you're bad. Just don't be boring.
Maybe, just maybe, it can redeem
Yeah,
itself.
that's the worst thing any movie can be is boring, you know, even if it's like so bad that that's what's so great about like it's so bad that it's good films, you know, like it's not
Yeah.
boring, it's still entertaining even though it's crap, you know, like the middle of the road is the worst thing a movie can be. It's just like it's not memorable, it's not anything, it's just so okay that you won't remember it in like an hour, you know. That's the worst thing a film can be. It's
Yeah.
just forgettable.
It's like reading the tabloids. It's so awful that it's like a train wreck. You can't help but watch it.
Like
a so bad it's good film.
And
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
oh no, I was just gonna say, like, I mean, and the so bad they're good films are ideally like those are the best kind of films to watch with groups. Those are the movies that actually
Get like
bind
a
people together.
get a few group of friends, you know, have some alcohol and beer, you know, and
Oh
you
yeah.
know, have a
Oh,
holler. Sure.
trust me. Okay, so I watched, like, for instance, The Room. I think everybody has actually seen The Room at this point, and if you haven't, do it. It's an experience, but different kinds of experiences you can have. I've had both. The first time I saw The Room, I had just heard about it, and I watched it by myself. And that's
Oh.
the worst mistake I had ever made. It, like, I was bored, I was mad, I was baffled. Like, I wasn't laughing at it, like we all do, until I watched it again with a group of people. I was like,
Right.
I remember being asked to watch it again, and I was just like, I was actually being really stubborn about it. I was like, no, I'm not watching that movie again. Like, I hate it. It, like, I hate it that much that, like, I don't want to hang out with you if you're watching it. And I acquiesced. I was like, fine, I will go. And watching it with a group of people that hate it just as much as you, or I hate's a strong word, but like they feel about it just as strongly as you do, changed it. And it was one of the funniest nights I've ever had watching a movie, you know. So.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I only seen The Room one time. It's funny that you mention it. And when I watched it by myself too. I only seen it that one time because I knew of The Room, but it was when the Disaster Artist film came out. I was like, okay, now that movie's out, I want to watch that movie, but I feel like I should watch The Room before I watch that movie. So I
Yes.
watched The Room by myself, and I had a similar experience, but like I kind of knew what the film was more about because I seen like people talk about it, and
Yeah.
like there was times where I would like yell at the television, you know, at the TV, but it wouldn't be like I wasn't really laughing. I would just be more baffled on like what the hell is going
What
on, and
are you doing? Yeah.
then I never saw the Disaster Artist, you know, so I watched the anticipation to watch that film, and then I still haven't seen that film.
It sounds like the two of you should watch movies together because you seem to get angry at the same things. We were scrolling through your Instagram before, and since we are leaning toward the topic of horror and Halloween, I was very intrigued on your page. I saw your mini cemetery. Can you
Oh.
elaborate a little bit on that? Because I was very intrigued. There's this little man in a coffin, little
Yeah.
corpse.
Okay, so, you know, I label myself as an illustrator, but I try not to limit myself with doing creative things. I don't even know what got into me to make them. I was in a, I think it was in like a Hobby Lobby one day, and they had these little cases, and it something just popped into my head to grab them, and I was just like, yeah, it's what if I made like little tiny little cemeteries, you know? Like, it just kind of started from there.
So what do you use? Like clay or I see we're looking at the picture right now. It's like moss.
Okay, so the
Give
very
us
first,
give us the lowdown on this.
okay, so the very first one I made, it wasn't the actual cemetery. I made a I had like spare cardboard on my desk. I don't even remember like what I initially had it for. It's just like scrap, and I built a I just got some super glue, and I made like a tiny little coffin, and I painted it, and I went out, I got some clay, just some Sculpey, and I made a tiny little corpse to put inside of it. And then I was just like, all right, well, this is kind of funny. Like, what can I do with this? And
Where can I
then,
take this?
yeah,
Right.
I take this. And then that's when I got the little wooden case that with the clear top, and I just went to another hobby shop. I got some like diorama moss, and you know, set that in there. And from there, and then I was just like, all right, well, this is tiny. How tiny can I make them? And that's when I got like the little headstones, and instead of making a tiny little coffin, like it got to the point where like I was like, all right, this is too tiny. My sausage fingers can't, you know. So it's just like, you know, maybe it was my love for like the diorama in Beetlejuice.
Oh yeah, I love that
Yeah,
opening shot.
you know, kind of creeping in
So
the back.
cool.
But I just liked having I just like the idea of having like this little tiny little cemetery you can put in a case and you know put on your desk. And you know, goofing around online, I found a little diorama, you know, vampire in a coffin. So I was like, I'm totally getting that. And that's when I made the one with like the stone walls and stone floor, which
Yeah,
it's
how'd you do the stones?
I just took a regular old poster board, and I peeled the first layer of paper off of it, so it's just like the foam, you know, innards. And to get the stone look, I just took a like a ballpoint pen, and I just kind of drew the stones into it, and then I just painted it, and then let it
Oh.
wore it down a little, and then painted over it again to get that stone look. And I used a black foam board, so that way it kind of already had like that primed texture look to it, so it wasn't gonna be like too bright, you know, coming bright white coming through.
Right, because I was gonna say when you did we're looking at the pictures now, when you use the ballpoint pen, you get those indentations and then
Yeah.
you probably just spray the, or paint directly over it. The paint's just gonna seep right into those cracks.
Yep.
Do you
And
so with that little like man in the coffin, did you like is that a like a little model or did you sculpt that? Like how
I
did you
no. The in the stone one, no. That's just a
Oh.
little diorama figure
I
that
see.
I purchased. No, that if they're if you ever see it in person, I like they're I'm I need to finish a few because I do plan on putting them up on my Etsy store. They're that guy's like super tiny. Like I couldn't make that. I couldn't make that. It's just way too tiny.
No, I mean I could believe you either way. Like it looks like I thought you made that. Like I could see, to be honest, I think you could do something like that. I think that would, you know, you definitely have the t talents and the skills and the tools to.
I appreciate that. I mean, like, I'm sure if I really put my mind to it, I could figure out a way to do it. Like, this was obviously like, I can't even say obviously. I don't even know how they're made. They're just so tiny.
No, I think that's really cool that how you're like expanding your horizon and you're working like more with a physical medium.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I love working with clay, so I can definitely appreciate this. I'm kind of chuckling because I see that you left the one plot open for the next poor victim.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I
That's
may
really
or may not like try and make some tiny little coffin that can go in it. Like the
like a play set.
yeah like the one underneath it, if you guys are looking at, that's in that square glass vase.
Oh yeah, the one that you put in, make sure to put your cemetery in ample sunlight.
Yes. The photo's dark, but underneath the grass in that one is actual soil, so that it goes from so you can actually see like the dirt and then like the layer of dirt and then the grass on top. And I have other vases that like I plan on doing it with. I just need to figure out a way to do it without dirt getting in. But what I want to do is like if you're looking at the photo now, like in that dark section down at the bottom. I know this is great for people just listening, but we're looking at a photo.
Well, you're doing a pretty good job describing it, so I think I can paint a mental picture in their head.
And you could go follow him on
You
Instagram.
can do that too and see
SK Illustration.
but I wanted to have like a tiny little coffin, like side cut coffin in the dirt up against the glass.
Oh, that'd be really
Yeah.
cool.
This is so morbid, yet so awesome.
Yeah. Oh.
That's the whole motif,
I
yeah.
know, I love it.
That would be really
Honestly, I just do it to make my wife giggle because she likes tiny things.
cool.
And
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who doesn't like tiny things. I will
she
gladly join that club.
and she went to school for anthropology, so she has actually handled like human remains and stuff like that. Like she's really
Oh.
into that. So
So
I
does he provide like a lot of inspiration? Like, here, this is something I've seen. Oh, cool. I'm gonna put this in my
Yeah.
art.
Yeah, actually, so there's an earlier set of paintings. They're all very tiny. It's the stages of human decay. It's six stages, and she having studied it, she's well versed in it, and I would actually show her the progress of the paintings. I was just like, does this look in between? Like, is this correctly portraying the stages between bloat and decay? Like she's like, yeah, that looks good. And
Oh,
then
that wow.
yeah.
So you ask her for authenticity. Like, is this like realistic? Is this how the human body actually
Yes.
works?
Yes, actually, the very first one, the if you find it, it's a purple photo. I use purple lighting on it, but it's the glass case with the little cardboard coffin I was talking about. The little corpse in the coffin, if you were to remove him, the lining of the coffin, I used the same technique that I used on the stone. The lining of the coffin with the foam board, except I just did it in like that crisscross like button pattern you would see on like upholstery and stuff like that. But if you take them out, there's a stain. There's like, you know, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, like when we go into our coffins and stuff, like, you know, we're embalmed most times and embalmers do a really good job, but eventually that, you know, gases and fluids leak out and, you know, we eventually turn to I know it's gross, but it's just like, does this accurately represent putrefaction? And I impressed her and I was just like, awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
Awesome. I did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the seal of approval right there.
You know, because I feel like most people would, like, maybe just paint, like, oh, it's a corpse, so just paint red for blood. I'm like, well, no, blood oxidizes and turns brown, you know, when it dries and stuff. And when it's coming out, like, the stain is, this is going to be one of the most morbid things you'll probably ever hear.
Bring it on.
But for the series of six photos I did on decay, I always try and do a little bit of research on stuff, you know, trying to find proper reference photos and things like that. So when you're doing stuff on this, it gets kind of gnarly, to say the least. But I will say, the human body post-mortem produces some of the most beautiful and vivid colors I've ever seen that I have a really hard time trying to replicate with ink or paint. Like, I can't, or like even digitally, like I have a really hard time getting that shade or that hue. The human body, like, because of how rapidly it changes, you'll go through blues and yellows and, you know, greens and reds very rapidly. And while it's, you know, very off-putting and you know, gross and, you know, scary, I don't know, there's something about when you break it down to just colors and you take away the humanity, unfortunately, yeah, of the situation, it's very, it reminds me of watercolors, and I think that's why I did them in watercolors and gouache and stuff like that.
I give you a lot of credit for doing the research to have that authenticity, because personally, I think I would have vomited looking at these pictures.
Yeah, I mean, it can't compare, but it reminds me of what Tom Savini used to say when he was in Vietnam. He was a photographer, and he had the unfortunate job of, you know, photographing war, you know, and a lot of them, you know, a lot of the photographs he took involved, you know, dead bodies, being them, you know, US soldiers or Vietnamese soldiers and things like that. But the way he said it was, when he had the camera up to his face and he had the viewfinder up to his eye, the camera acted as a barrier. It was it allowed him to kind of separate himself from the horrors that were actually in front of him for just a moment, and remove the humanity so he could take the photos. And in turn, those, a lot of his war photography helped him in his skills with making special effects and props and stuff for horror movies and things like that. So when you always going back to our discussion of horror movies, when you watch things like that, you know, people don't just just make these things up on a fly. Like an interesting tidbit I got from, like, I knew ahead of time, but what he says it in his own personal documentary on him, Tom Savini, he says, you know, it always irritated him when, like, be it a horror movie or an action movie, when someone dies, you know, they have their mouth closed and their eyes are shut. Like, unfortunately, yeah, that is not what happens when you die. Regardless of how you die, your eyes snap open and your mouth is agape and you have this horrified look on your face. Mm. You go in your sleep, you can go in a 100-person gun battle, you die with this horrible look on your face because of rigor mortis, because of how the body functions. And it always irritated him when people would do that in movies. So if you ever watch a movie where Tom Savini is doing the special effects, make special note of how people die. I guarantee you they will have their eyes open and their mouths open.
Oh yeah, he's a master of the craft for sure. Like, he knows, mm-hmm, what, like what in Friday, the final chapter, which isn't the final chapter, when the sword like slides down. Face, like, that is so grotesque and morbid. It's fantastic. Yeah. Like, his work is awesome.
Oh, it is. His work on Day of the Dead, like, it's simple stuff. Like, there are a couple shots. Like, had I not known how he did it, I would have assumed someone shot this person in the head. But, like, to achieve a headshot, like, he just put like a quarter on fishing line on someone's forehead, like, makeup over it, and, you know, when it was time for the bang, you yank it off, and they have like compressed air behind them for the splatter. It's just simple sleight of hand tricks, you know.
And it shows how much, like, you don't need like inflated budget to pull off these special effects. As long as it's like real on camera, it looks real to the eye.
Yeah. You can do a lot with a little. If you do it right, if you sit down and take the time to figure it out.
Oh yeah, for sure. So we're actually running a little bit short on time, but I have a few questions for you before we.
Yeah, I know. I apologize. I can run my mouth.
No.
Please
this is,
do.
Yeah,
please.
This helps us out immensely.
We love having you on because we get to have these discussions with people who actually share the same interests as us.
Yeah.
As long as I'm not just yammering on.
This is fascinating stuff. Actually, all this, all these facts about the process of human decay, I actually didn't really know a lot of these things that you're telling me. So
it's so funny because I took a forensics course in high school and we did learn this, and, you know, information slowly coming back, but I'm like, I don't know if I actually want to remember this.
I think it's not to get too off topic, but I think it's still on Netflix. They have like all of the first two seasons or whatever of Forensic Files, and I think Forensic Files is back on the air on Sunday night. So like, I watch that all the time.
Oh yeah, that stuff it's pretty morbid, but it's fascinating.
It's fascinating.
I know. I need to make a list of everything that's on Netflix between teaching elementary school and graduate school. I can't close my eyes.
God bless you.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you, you know, going back to Halloween, do you have a Halloween costume for this year? And if not, what is your favorite Halloween costume that you've done in the past?
Ooh, this year, I don't think I have one for this year, which is fine. It's not like it's not that I can't think of one.
Mm-hmm.
Or that I'm not in the spirit, because I am. I just don't think I'm gonna do one. But okay, my favorite costume that I ever made. I know what it is. I don't know if you'll count it, because technically I never got to wear it.
Okay.
I don't know what happened. I think I was like 18 or 19, supposed to go to a Halloween party or something like that, and I was gonna go as Ash from the Evil Dead, and I found the exact color shirt. My dad gave me an old chainsaw that we took apart, hollowed it out so I could put it on my hand. I had a realistic looking toy gun that I painted and mocked up to look make a little bit more real. Made a holster for the back. I had a really good Ash costume, and I never got to wear it.
What happened?
I don't quite remember. Probably re I probably repressed the reason why. I just didn't end up going to the Halloween party.
Oh, do you
So
still have the costume?
no, this was I was 18 or 19, and I'm 34 now, so no, I don't have that anymore. So I will go and offer up a substitute. It wasn't my favorite, but it made a lot of other people happy. I went as a banana.
I love that. I used to have.
I dressed up as a banana. I don't know what possessed me to just waste money on a banana suit. I just thought it would be funny to just wear a banana costume, and
You brought joy to people,
I brought
therefore,
joy
it's
to
not a.
people. They really liked the banana. It's probably because of the fact that, I would be the kind of person to make a really intricate Ash costume, or what was another intricate costume I did? I did a very movie accurate Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas costume, Hunter S. Thompson, one year.
That's awesome.
I did one of Jim Carrey from The Cable Guy, which, I mean, like, it's not, it's a Blue Dickies like work suit, a work belt, some a power drill and some other things like that, but like I would try to get it as a accurate as possible. But so I think just the fact that I showed up as a banana, I think threw a loop.
The banana might be one of my favorite costumes. I remember I used to have one of the, those cheesy middle school Halloween parties where, you play games and this man and your parents try to do all the fun party games. But I remember one of my friends came as a banana and, we were all dressed up in our cheesy, whatever you wear at 11, 12-year-old girl parties. And one of my friends came as a banana and I was just like, please wear this every year for the rest of your life.
I think for the first, I don't know, 7 or 8 years of my life, I was Dracula. I didn't want to be anything else but a vampire. When I was a young kid, and then oddly enough, the first year, I was something different. Like I went from Dracula to just being C-3PO from Star Wars. Like
That's
just like
awesome.
I was just a big leap, big leap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. It's funny that you mentioned Ash. I remember I actually did an Ash costume. I didn't do anything nearly as intricate as you did because, the chainsaw, I find it fascinating that you hauled out an actual chainsaw and figured out a way to put it on your hand. Like, that's where I kind of was struggling. I had the shirt, I had the pants, the boots. That was all the easy part. And I, just splattered red paint on the shirt.
Yeah.
And then at the point when I got to the chainsaw, I'm like, oh, shit, what do I do? So I found like this cheesy like plastic chainsaw. It was like yellow instead of red. Ash's chainsaw is like the whole hilt and holster is red. And
Red.
I'm like struggling. I'm like, all right. So I find this cheesy plastic one. I think it's like for like a leather face or something. So I paint it red. Then I wear a winter glove. I basically slapped the winter glove onto the chainsaw, got red duct tape, and duct taped the plastic crappy chainsaw onto my right hand, which is my dominant hand, by the way. So
Yeah.
I remember going to a party and like hitting people in the head with this plastic thing, and I'm like, oh, sorry, you know, like I can't really control it.
I mean, to your credit, like that wasn't a bad, you know, solution. Because I mean, if you watch the original Evil Dead films, when he does it, like, and he has it on his hand, like, first off, like, I like, you gotta like buy into the movie and like suspend somewhat, you know, suspend disbelief, you know, whatever, because there's, you know, dead people returning from the grave and stuff like that.
But, oh yeah, of course.
This man just hacked off his own hand with a chainsaw, and then he's got this bloody stump of a hand, and he's in a shed. Somehow he must be a top-notch engineer to figure out how to attach his hand to the chainsaw and still have the chainsaw function properly.
Oh yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? With one hand.
if I hit my shin on something the wrong way, I'm not going anywhere. Like, I'm like if I stub my toe like hard enough, I'm gonna
die.
Like I can't think straight. Like, you ever hit your head on a cabinet, like, and then try and do something? You can't. Like, I can't
every day.
I can't imagine hacking my own hand off and then trying to like screw around with like moving parts and motorized things.
Oh yeah, exactly.
So
even with his adrenaline running, like, there's no way.
No, I'm going to lay down and die. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, basically.
All right, I'm out.
That's why those movies are so great. It's like on the level of camp, but it's like, I don't know.
They're fantastic. They're fantastic.
I got to say, Evil Dead 2, I think it's my all-time favorite horror movie.
It's up there. It's up there.
I've seen it so many times.
You know, I think Evil Dead 2 is the one most people watch, for sure.
Yeah, I think out of the three, I think that's the one people like the most.
It adds that humor to it. There's just enough humor and just enough horror to make it really enjoyable. There's something really visceral and very DIY about the, you know, because it was, but about the first one that definitely, I guess, would creep me out a bit more than the second one. Maybe it's because maybe with the first one, they didn't really know what the hell they were doing too much. You know, tighter budgets, you know, next to nothing budgets and stuff like that. But there's definitely a distinct difference in tone between the two.
Oh yeah, definitely. I also wanted to ask you, while we're on the verge of like costumes and everything, we actually met at a Comic-Con, Hudson Valley Comic-Con, which we mentioned earlier in the podcast. Have you ever cosplayed at any of the conventions, or like on your own or anything like that?
No, I've thought about it and have wanted to, but truth be told, my friends will deny it, but I'm actually quite a bashful person. I I'm by no means demeaning it in any way, because I think a lot of people have immense skill and talent putting costumes together.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I would feel personally silly. That's the only word I can think of.
Uh-huh. It's not for everyone.
No, and it's just for the fact that perfect analogy. So I've been asked to go to like the Renaissance Fair a bunch of times, and I always say no. And they're like, "Why?" And I'm like, "Well, if I'm gonna pay money for the ticket, I'm going all in. Like, I'm buying in. Like, I'm gonna dress like a barbarian. I'm gonna get drunk. I'm gonna kick people in the chest. Like, that's what I'm gonna do. Like, that's like that's what I want to do. I want to get in a suit of armor. I want to drink a bunch of mead out of a horn and hit people with an axe. And if I can't do that, I want nothing to do with it. So I guess in turn, that's kind of my reason why I don't cosplay or anything like that. It's not that I don't think it's cool. I think it's actually really cool, because I've seen some amazing costumes that like it, if I'm gonna dress up as something, I want to be the, you know, really make the character believable, you know, and
a convention may not be the most appropriate
exactly,
place.
Exactly. You know, I look at it in terms of like almost like acting, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So plus like I can't imagine being in a stuffy costume all day. That would just be too uncomfortable. You know, depending on what the costume is, of course. Like there are very easy or more comfortable costumes you could obviously do, but for a lot of people that are like really into it, make really elaborate costumes. Like a buddy of mine that cosplays as Batman, like it's like movie quality, like foam rubber suits. I'm like, he loses like 10 pounds like
wow.
in a day wearing the thing just from like sweat. And I'm like, dude, we're on the train, like you gotta
and you're sweat. Batman.
Yeah, I can't imagine like going to like New York Comic Con like on a train, like in costume. I think that just seems like a rough time to me.
That gives me anxiety. But like a buddy of mine, like we went down. Oh, I met him there, and he's a big muscular dude. So he went as Bane. So he just got to wear like he had a really good costume. That like it. It was a tank top, you know, like it was decent weather out. Like he was just like essentially like in a tank top.
Yeah. Being, comfortable.
Just being comfortable and muscular and like wearing a mask. And I'm like, all right, good for you. Like I couldn't do that. Like,
yeah.
I was going to say, it depends on the costume, but for me, there was something very empowering about walking around dressed as Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I could imagine. I mean, I won't know unless I dress up like Wonder Woman, but I don't plan on doing
that.
I think you could pull it off.
I agree. I think it would be a great look for you.
I have been told I have nice legs, so maybe I could.
I don't know.
You might just have to do it and find out. How it feels.
Yeah, it might be comfortable. It might be one of those most comfortable costumes, like where you go, like, all right, you know, I could wail around in this, you know. I could let loose.
I can imagine it being very drafty.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Steven, before we end the episode, I wanted to say, you know, thank you for going through the technicalities of trying to attempt to do a live podcast with us, a video podcast. I did want to say I did enjoy your Dracula poster that you I saw behind you, and your lighting was really cool, like your purple lighting. I don't know what you did there, but it was really interesting.
Yeah, just lighting, and I have got a weird flame light bulb that my dad gave me that I have behind me.
Okay.
Maybe for the next time we'll hammer out the details.
Yeah, we'll work out the bugs. You know, I don't
because like I said, like Halloween is every day. Like I could.
Oh yeah.
I could turn these lights on anytime.
It's like going into your own lair.
I wanted to say like that Dracula poster that you had behind you. I literally have it like right above me. You know, so
yeah. Yeah. We have this. Yeah, it was out of frame, but next to it is Next to it is the Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, and Psycho. And then there's another Dracula one out in the living room. There's a Vampira one, Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh wow! So you got it. You got them all.
Yeah, I've got work from other artists. I got this really great Pee Wee Herman print from a artist I've met. I've got my pride and joy, I would say, two of my pride and joys actually is an original 1980s Nightmare on Elm Street poster from when the movie first came out.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's signed by Heather Langenkamp, who played Nancy, and Amanda Weiss, who played Tina. I got to meet them at the convention that I was at.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Did you get the poster there too, or did you already have it and had them sign
it? No. Funny story about the poster. I saw it there, and I saw a guy haggling with the guy, like the table owner with it, and he walked away, and I thought it was lost. Like, I thought he was going to get it, and I came back around, and I saw it there again. So I think he was just fed up with dealing with people trying to haggle with him, that he just wanted the thing gone. And I go, how much for the for that poster? And he goes, he looks at me, goes, honestly, at this point, I'll give it to you for $20. And I was just, wow.
Oh wow. It seemed like everyone kind of beat him down before you got to
him. Yeah, they were just browbeating him, like trying to haggle him down, and I lucked out. And then I have a mini poster. I got signed from Joe Bob Briggs.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
It was funny. I went to his How Rednecks Saved Hollywood one man show in Long Island, literally the week of the pandemic, essentially. Like, I saw it on that Wednesday, and then that Friday was Friday the 13th, and then everything went to hell.
Oh wow. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Think about that. The last normal day anybody ever had in 2020 was Friday the 13th.
I never even thought of that.
I still remember it. I was teaching preschool at the time, and I said goodbye to my kids. I'm like, all right, see you on Monday.
Yep.
Boom.
Friday the 13th. And then here we are.
Here we are is right.
Yeah, exactly.
Here we are.
Wow. Yeah, no, I got to say, with all this crazy times, I'm glad that we have the opportunity to talk to people like you and all these immense artists out there, you know, and I, you're welcome on the show anytime. I actually have your Creature from the Black Lagoon art right next to my Dracula poster.
Oh, cool.
If it was video, I would show you. We'll save that for next time. We'll work out all the bugs.
Yeah, anytime you guys want to chat about anything, you know, let me know.
Oh yeah.
Likewise, if you want anything promoted, definitely. You know, we always tell everybody, but especially our returners. You know, if you want anything promoted, definitely come back on. If you want us to post anything,
yeah. If you need anything for our end, just let us.
Yeah, I have loads of prints. An original paintings to sell on my Etsy that you can get through my Instagram, which is SK Illustrations. And you know, we were talking about them before. I have just a couple to finish up, but I'll have those little mini cemeteries up for sale, and some more original prints and paintings from this year's. I plan on doing, not to waste any more time, but like, you know, October ink. Everybody does Inktober. Well, I do it too, but sometimes I don't have enough time. So I'm like, I'm going to give myself a gimmick and I'm going to do 13 days of Inktober because 13.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It, you know, it's unlucky, but really it just gives me more time to work on things, you know? So I'll have those prints up. I'm not going to say what I'm doing because it's a little bit of a surprise and I got to get that, that all sorted out, because every year I try and do it my own theme. So I've got 13 ink drawings I'm going to be doing starting, I think, Monday.
Oh, so you do it for the last 13
last 13 days of Halloween. October I do them. Yeah.
Okay. No, I mean, that's kind of cool because it's like, you know, instead of 31 days, it's 13. It's just 31 in reverse.
Yeah.
You know,
lucky 13.
Yeah.
My hack.
What's your Etsy store so people can find you there?
I believe it is the same as my Instagram. I believe it is SK Illustrations. There's a link in the button in my Instagram bio, actually.
Okay, so yeah, you heard it here, SK Illustrations. Find them on Instagram, on Facebook, and on Etsy.
Mm-hmm.
Steven, thank you so much for coming on once again. It really was a pleasure.
This is Josh from Bat Yard Productions, sending you off up, up, and away until next Bat Yard's Finest episode.
And this is Leah, all the way from Themyscira.
Becoming super friends, one episode at a time.